The question was whether Hardy would use it to evacuate his men or stay and fight to a bitter end. Hardy waved Corey into an empty chair.
"Sit down and have a bite, Lieutenant. Where's that sergeant of yours?"
"Sergeant Strayhorn has ridden out to check on the defenses, sir," Corey replied as he lowered himself into the chair. With his fork, he speared a couple of hot cakes from a platter in the middle of the table. The food was better here in Savannah. That was one thing you could say for the place. Blockade runners had been quite successful in bringing in supplies past the Yankee ships that patrolled the coast. However, Corey knew that situation was not going to last much longer. Already, some provisions were beginning to run low. If Sherman laid siege to the city, it wouldn't be long until it was Vicksburg all over again, he thought glumly. He would never forget those grueling days and the illness, starvation, and deprivation. The only good thing about the siege of Vicksburg was that he and Lucille had gotten married while it was going on, in a cave dug out for shelter from the endless federal bombardment. He hated to think that the same thing could happen to this beautiful city by the sea. It was going to happen, unless some miracle occurred to divert Sherman from his chosen course. Sometimes, Corey thought, it was better to be a simple foot soldier, unaware of what was happening on a broader scale until the shooting started and the enemy was right in your face. He and Abner Strayhorn had come to Charleston in that role, infantrymen, as part of Hardy's headquarters company. But the general had found out that Corey had served as a scout and aide to Bedford Forrest and had promoted him to sergeant, making him an orderly. By the time Hardy had come down the coast to Savannah to supervise its defense, Corey had been promoted again, this time to lieutenant, and was serving as an aide to the general. His rise through the ranks had been swift, but in a war, there was little time to waste. Men who had the ability to handle a job had to be placed in a position to do that job. Corey had been able to bring Abner up through the ranks with him, although one rung lower on the ladder. Abner didn't mind. He was perfectly content to be a sergeant, claiming that officers, even junior ones like Corey, had too damn many responsibilities. Betty Heffy brought more hotcakes from the kitchen. Corey ate his fill, having learned the soldier's lesson that no matter how much food was in front of him now, the odds were that soon he would be hungry again. The generals continued to discuss the situation as Corey ate.
"I think you had best get the engineers to work on a pontoon bridge across the Savannah," Beauregard suggested. "You'll want to be able to get your men across the railroad in a hurry, if such becomes necessary."
Hardy frowned at the idea.
"That would mean abandoning the city, General."
Beauregard inclined his head.
"Indeed, it would. Better that than the utter destruction of your army, General."
"I do not plan for my army to be on the verge of utter destruction, sir," Hardy said, stiffly.
If Beauregard took any offense to Hardy's tone, he gave no sign of it.
"Of course not. Our defenses are sound and well manned. Sherman will never reach Savannah. But I'd give some thought to that bridge, in a way."
"Yes, sir, I'll do that,"
Hardy said. Beauregard was his superior, the only officer of higher rank in this part of the Confederacy, and although Beauregard had stopped short of giving Hardy a direct order to build a bridge across the Savannah, Corey knew the result would be the same. The bridge would be built. On several occasions, he had ridden out of the city with General Hardy on inspection tours of the city defenses to the south and west. The fortifications were formidable. Breastworks, trenches, rifle pits, artillery emplacements, all fronted by a barrier of fallen trees that had been sharpened and interlaced to form a deadly obstacle. No commander could have asked for a stouter line from which to repel the enemy. The problem was that even counting all the regular army soldiers and militiamen in Savannah combined, there were hardly enough to man the defenses. The line of breastworks was solid. The line of men behind them was much more fragile. After breakfast, the generals and the senior officers withdrew to the parlor, where they had spread out maps and odd bits of information. The endless discussion of strategy and preparation and contingencies went on all day. Corey remained in the parlor most of the time, but late in the afternoon he went out on the porch again and sat in a rocking chair, close enough so that Hardy could summon him easily enough if he was needed. Corey was an officer now, but at heart he was still a civilian. He did his best, but he would never be the sort of military man the others were. The day was warm, especially for December. Here on the coast, the weather was always mild, he supposed. He gazed across the harbor toward the South Carolina shore. When he had left home in Virginia years earlier, his ambition had been to travel to satisfy his restless nature. He had certainly done plenty of that, he thought. He had been all over the place, everywhere that men were killing each other over their politics.
"Corey!"
The shout from the street made him turn his head and start up out of the chair. He saw Abner hurrying along the road toward the headquarters. The sergeant turned in at the gate in the white picket fence and came up the walk, almost at a run. Corey met him at the top of the steps. "What is it, Abner? What's wrong?"
"Begging your pardon, Lieutenant. I didn't mean to call you—"
"Don't worry about that," Corey cut in. "Just tell me what's happened."
"Fort McAllister's fallen. The damn Yanks took it a little while ago. We just got word."
Corey's heart sank. Fort McAllister was the main link in the defense line to the south. It was considered virtually impregnable from the sea.
"How could they do that?"
Corey asked, his voice little more than a whisper.
"It must have taken the whole Yankee fleet."
Abner shook his head.
"Sherman struck it from the weak side, from the land."
That seemed almost as unlikely to Corey as an attack from the sea. When he had been with the general during his first inspection of the fort, he had seen with his own eyes the impassable trench that surrounded the strong point. At least 15 feet deep and 7 feet wide, the bottom of the trench was packed with fallen timbers that had been sharpened to wicked points and embedded in the ground at an angle that threatened to impale anyone who tried to clamber over them.
How could they?
"I don't know. The report said it didn't take the damn Yanks more than 15 minutes to get through the trench and overrun the place. Not many of them got themselves killed, neither."
The strain in Abner's voice showed that he understood the gravity of the news just as well as Corey did.
"I reckon there'll be a courier showing up with the official report for the generals. I come on ahead when I heard about it. I figured I'd give you the lowdown first. Maybe you can sort of get the general ready for the bad news."
No amount of preparation could soften this blow, Corey admitted to himself. Without the garrison at Fort McAllister to protect Savannah from the south, Sherman would be able to resupply his army from the ships that could now come ashore without having to worry about McAllister's guns. And as soon as Sherman was ready, he could turn north and bear down on Savannah. This wasn't the very end, Corey thought, but it was damn close.
"I'd better let General Hardy and General Beauregard know about this," he said, dully.
"What do you reckon we're gonna do?"
Corey could only shake his head.
"Fight or run," he said. "That's all that's left."
Somewhere, it was probably warm, Henry thought, but sure as hell not here in Tennessee. For several days, Forrest's cavalry had been pinned down near Murfreesboro, not by the enemy, but by the elements. Another storm had blown in on December 7th and lasted for more than a week, bringing not snow this time, but rather sleet. It came down hard, almost as thick as a pouring rain, accompanied by high winds and the bitterest cold of the season. When the ice storm finally stopped, it left an inch-thick layer of frozen, slippery stuff on everything. Ground, trees, bushes, buildings, anything that was out in the open. A man risked a fall and a broken arm or leg every time he tried to walk 10 feet. As for riding the horses, that was out of the question.